Welcome back to Don't Call It a Book Club. My name is Luke.
My name is Dan.
Dan, today is a big day.
Yep.
I'm worried that we're going to have to stop the podcast after this book because today we are finishing the currently written A Song of Ice and Fire series. Well, we're starting the last book, I should say. We're reading
The Beginning of the
A
End.
Dance with Dragons by George R.R. Martin.
Yep.
Book five.
Yep.
It's been a long time coming.
I mean, thematically, Luke, we would have to release three episodes and then stop. And then never release another one. Because we are doing this book in quarters.
We're doing this book in quarters, so good luck getting us to release the final quarter.
We never will. We'll pivot to a video format and redo every episode up until this point as a video podcast.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's very in right now.
It's really hot. But before that, Luke, we have to get warmed up.
Yes.
Luke, I recently did a long drive.
Mm-hmm.
And I did this drive partly because I wanted to bring my dog on the trip I was taking.
Yeah, I'm familiar with this dilemma.
I did not expect a problem that I encountered on said drive with my dog. So, let me tell you what's going on. I'm in the car. It's me and my dog. That's it. It's very hot in our country right now. It's very hot. Like midday, we're getting up into the 90s, feels like 100 degrees. It's humid out there. I'm driving around in the south, sort of southeastern part of the US. Okay, I'm setting some context here. I did not realize how hard it was going to be to go to the bathroom.
Yes, this is where I knew you were going with this.
Oh my God. Okay. My dog can go to the bathroom literally anywhere. We get out, there's a little grass, pee. Awesome. Love it. Yeah. Me, on the other hand, I can't leave my dog in the car. Reason number one, people are going to think I've abandoned my dog and break my window open so she doesn't overheat, which is like fair. You should do that.
Yeah.
Reason number two, if I want to leave my dog in the car, I've got to leave the keys in my car and leave like the AC running. Problem there is I don't have another set of keys, so my car is just unlocked while I'm in the bathroom at some random place, okay? So then the option is, okay, bring my dog into the bathroom. Nowhere can I do that. This is not a thing I can do. So I'm driving being like, I need to find the most obscure exit I can find and just drive on some country road for like 10 minutes and find a tree somewhere that I can just have a pee by a tree.
that's the route you took?
Oh, I held it. Your boy held it.
You held it for 9 hours or whatever?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So not to brag, but
that's pretty impressive.
But I also just was like, this was sort of my little game to figure out on the drive, was like, how do I solve this problem? Because even at the rest stops that I would stop at and like let my dog get out, I'd stretch my legs a little bit. You can't bring your dog in the bathroom with you there.
Well, could you though?
Counterpoint, there were signs everywhere that said no dogs.
Okay. People try to do this all the time, I guess.
Yeah, I think this is a common problem. Now, if I had found a rest stop that there was nobody at, you know I'm going in with my dog. Because I'm not going to be in there very long. If there's no cars in the parking lot at this rest stop, I'm just going. I'm just going in there. We're doing it. I'm coming out. No harm, no foul. Nobody's there. My dog's not going to damage anything. It's going to be fine. Never encountered that once. I would like look as we were getting close. I'd like peep the parking lot and be like, anybody in there? Yep. Okay. We're moving on. And another factor that I thought was going to be challenging, but turned out to be okay, was getting lunch on the drive, getting a little snack. Almost did a little vending situation at a rest stop, but the problem there was they were in a building that had a no dog sign on the front door of the building. So I'm like, I can't even go into like the vending machine area and get something for a little snack.
Did you not do drive through?
Okay, this is what I ended up doing, Luke. The problem is there, I'm taking a little gamble because we went Taco Bell. I'm taking a little risk with that one.
Peak time to go Taco Bell.
The line was short. I'll say that. The line was very short.
I love Taco Bell, though.
Yeah, dude. We've talked about this on the pod already. We don't need to give them any more free advertising. They're already getting plenty of it this week. But
I will say, you only find out if you got the Cyclosporia infection after like 2 weeks.
Yeah, so it's got an incubation period. So by the time this episode comes out, by the time we record our next episode, I'll be giving you an update.
Okay. Okay. Good.
But what do you do, Luke? What do you do? I feel like there needs to be a place that's like, this is the bathroom place if you have a dog and you need to pee.
If you have a dog, yeah.
Or do more than pee. Because that's the other thing, Luke. If I had a dog and I need to pee, I can do that, right? I can find a place to do that. If I've got to do more than that, it's like, this is going to be way tougher.
Yeah, for sure. I think that what I've done in the past is, and maybe it wasn't quite as hot when I did this, but if you like get gas, it's usually shaded.
Yep.
Under there. Yeah. And then you like leave all the windows like open, but not enough for my dog to jump out. And then I like hurry up and pee.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. This is what I was debating doing. I was very close to doing it. It was very hot outside. It was like, even like 5 minutes, I would have been uncomfortable leaving my dog for that long.
That's fair. It's a toughie. It's a toughie.
We just need, on those blue signs that you pass as you're on the freeway, we need one of them to be like, dog zone. Here's a dog zone.
Yeah.
It's got a toilet and a
little
place.
Yeah, but like no one thinks of like you needing something at the dog. Because like there are like rest stops with like dog play areas.
Yeah.
But that's never like what, it's never thought of as how can we help the person with the dog. It's more like this is where the dog will have fun.
Yeah, we stopped at a great rest station that had like a whole dog park area with like a double gate and like all kinds of stuff. And I was like, this is fucking sick. Glad we stopped here. But you know what they didn't have in the dog play place? A little human bathroom.
Right. Yeah. They didn't have a little porta potty like within the dog play zone.
Or like abutting it or something. It was just. Yeah. Oof. So that's our next step.
Our next business idea?
Business idea or just infrastructure upgrade in our country. Since we're never going to get trains, let's at least get bathrooms attached to the dog play areas on highway rest stops.
Right. Let's get the low-hanging fruit out of the way.
I think that's achievable, you know?
No, I agree. Classic challenge of dog road trips.
I wasn't expecting it or prepared for it.
Yeah, you got to bring a bottle next time.
Bring a bottle. But again, Luke, you're not solving my number two problem here.
Yeah.
You're only solving a number one. And based on whatever happens to me from the Taco Bell this week, that number two problem might have been a big issue on the drive.
Could have been. So true. Okay. Warmed up. Let's talk book. So we read the first quarter of it. And this is, it's after a Tyrion chapter, before a Davos chapter, basically, is the way that I think we're describing where it's at.
Yeah. In my book, it's like 242 pages, but it's going to vary depending on your page size.
Yeah. Okay. Classic meta question, Dan. How it's been a while since we've read the previous book.
Mm-hmm.
How much did you do any kind of like summaries, or are you good to go as usual?
I feel like I'm good to go. I also feel like this is the first time that we're reading one of these that I remember reading it very vividly. Like,
oh, okay.
I remember the first time I read this book very clearly. And whereas the past ones, it had been a little bit longer, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like I didn't do any reading to get caught up. I know where we're at. I know what's going on.
Yeah. Same here. okay. I'm trying to find a delicate way of saying my first note.
Go. Let's get started, Luke. Come on.
So, Again, we're going to do the same thing kind of that I did with when we did The King Killer. But it's been... I have read these books. You've read these books as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think I read this book either when I was like a senior in high school or like freshman in college around that time period. So it's been a while.
Yeah, I was in college. Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of true of the rest of the series as well, but it's especially stark with the first two chapters. A lot of sexual violence in these books.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of insane. And, like, I don't want to be a woke scold here, although I'm pro woke scolding.
Yeah.
But Tyrion comes off very negatively in the first chapter.
He's going through it, you know? He's really struggling right now, so...
He's really struggling... So the prologue is from something Six Skins, the warg.
Mm-hmm.
He talks a couple times about how he's frequently had sex with raped young women essentially. And then we go into the Tyrion chapter.
Yep.
Which he's doing Tyrion things mostly. And then he threatens to rape and murder the serving girl.
Yeah, because he wants to see her be a little afraid of him.
Because he wanted her to be afraid of him.
Yeah.
And it's like, ah, damn, these are bad.
Yeah, whoa. Yeah. I mean, like, he is a bit of a troll, you know?
Right.
Tyrion's a bit of a troll, so he's just trolling. He wouldn't actually do it.
Yeah, he just wanted her to be afraid for her life and stuff.
Yeah, so, he just wanted to troll a little bit.
Which is fine and cool.
It's actually funny. It's actually really funny that he did that. He's really cool for doing it.
Right. No, but okay, the reason I do want to specifically mention this is because I think that it's kind of, I think maybe from a writing perspective, it's meant to hopefully show that Tyrion's not always the best person, right?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think it's also meant to show that Tyrion is... like very emotionally disturbed after his flight from Castro.
But I think we have to talk about it because Tyrion is typically a very popular character.
Yeah.
And I think if we don't talk about it, it normalizes the action. But no, this is meant to show that either or both of Tyrion's not the best guy, and also he's very mentally disturbed right now.
I will say that I think I think contrasting this with the Sansa marriage is an interesting one, because obviously there is a very different circumstance where Tyrion is basically expected to rape Sansa because he's married to her and they're trying to like legitimize that union. And Tyrion has this very like cool guy Tyrion moment where he's like, hey, Sansa, I won't have sex with you if you don't want me to.
Right. Heroically.
Because that's how cool I am.
Right.
Which, of course, like in the context of everything that's going on, like, does characterize Tyrion as a good guy, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that that is part of what makes this feel, for me at least, like he is sort of lashing out at the world with this statement rather than this specific person. He's trying to find somebody he can kick because he feels very down to me.
And I think it is like very much a, like, he wants a feeling of power, I think, in that.
Yes.
Definitely. Which is famously a motivation for, like, rape and sexual assault.
Correct. And I think we don't know if anything actually comes of this. I think what I read is that he doesn't make good on this threat, and it was just a threat to, like, see the look of fear in this person's eyes who's sort of, like, talking down to him. But we never...
Right. Well, okay. I do want to be... She does not talk down to him.
Well, yes. Yes, I guess this is true. But my main point here is, like, we don't actually learn if he makes good on this threat, yeah, or not.
Right.
I assume he doesn't, based on our experience of Tyrion.
I'm assuming that's true.
But I also think it's so fascinating how it feels like Tyrion is grasping for, like, power in this situation and control when he just murdered the most powerful person in Westeros.
Right.
Which is an exhibition of quite a lot of power over the, like,
yeah,
shape of the world. Like, I feel like he just did something that was very impactful, and, like, he used his power to shape things very significantly with that. But
yes,
even then, he still feels sort of powerless in this current circumstance. Like, right now, he seems to feel very powerless, which is kind of
funny. Well, he is very like, he has very little control over his own circumstances right now.
I think that is true. But it's partly because of, like, choices that he's made that are big, powerful,
yeah, 100%.
World-changing choices.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man.
It's a tough intro.
It's a tough way to get to Tyrion, and he seems to be really struggling with it a lot throughout this section. Which I'm sure we'll touch back on over time. Speaking of having a lot of power but feeling like you don't, I want to move to Daenerys.
Yeah.
Of course a dragon was gonna eat a person, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, this is the equivalent of somebody walking their dog without a leash around the neighborhood, or just, like, letting their dog go free in the neighborhood and then finding out it attacked another dog.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's not even that. It's the equivalent of having a wolf that you feed and being upset or surprised when a neighbor tells you that the wolf ate their cat or something.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's especially interesting, the contrast with this, where... So we see that Daenerys' dragon probably killed and ate a child.
Mm-hmm.
We also see a bunch of instances of, like, warg encounters with people where, like, the, you know, Bran and Jon and Six Skins are all in wolves, and the wolves eat people. And they, like, sort of experience eating a person from the, like, first person perspective. So there's a lot of, like, weird eating people thing going on in the beginning of this book. And the wargs don't seem that upset about it. Like, they seem a little weirded out, but they're not, like, horrified at what they've done for the most part.
Right.
Whereas, Daenerys didn't experience this firsthand, but she's also just, like, horrified that her wild animal has, like, killed and eaten a person.
Right.
What's the? You have to have a plan for this, right? You, if you don't plan to succeed, you plan to fail, Daenerys.
Yes, I also feel like. So, I think there's a lot to say about Daenerys' situation.
Yeah.
Because like my note actually is that her political issues are kind of overwhelming. Because like it's a completely unfamiliar city, and she has like no experience really managing a city, right? And like she completely upended its current like social structure.
Yes. Yes.
Everything structure.
Yep.
Economic and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so like just everything that comes to pass, it's like, how are you going to solve this?
Yep. Yep.
Because she's also facing like a little hidden revolt, sort of.
Yeah. Daenerys is another character who is both extremely powerful and also trapped by their circumstances that they've put themselves into, right?
Right. Very much so. Yeah. And then the final one is what you've been alluding to, which is that they're like, she doesn't know what to do with her dragons right now.
Yeah.
So the two of them are currently chained up in the dungeon.
Ah.
Which she can't do.
You're doing it all wrong, Daenerys. I'm sorry. Everything about this is wrong. You're doing it bad.
Yeah.
Specifically with the dragon thing.
Yes. Here's the thing. Here's my note. And okay, one thing I will say is that it's very, like, when I'm reading this, when I'm reading a Daenerys section, I'm constantly just trying to come up with solutions.
I've got,
you know what I mean?
Luke,
I'm sure that they wouldn't be correct, but it's just the nature of the scenario.
Yeah.
Like, we have to solve this because this is everything's wrong.
Yep. Yep.
Right.
Which I think is part of the brilliance of these chapters is I don't think Daenerys has necessarily made like a really obviously bad decision. And I think any decision that you might want to make that is different from the one she makes is sort of bad in a unique way. Like it's sort of an evil decision in a unique way. And Daenerys just doesn't want to make any of those. Which I respect, but also I don't know if it's possible. I don't know if that's gonna be tenable for her to do.
Right. I think my note also is gonna be she has been doing this thing where she holds court or whatever it's gonna be called.
Yeah.
Where she like hears people's problems and like passes judgment on what to do. And like, that's good if you're kind of already in a stable situation and you're like solving problems as they come.
Yeah.
But I feel like we need to take a step back and just like, you have a systematic issue in almost every aspect of this society right now.
Right.
And this is the value of Tyrion, by the way. Perfect timing if he's able to get there soon. Because they need someone basically who can step back and be like, we need bigger solutions than just like addressing. We need like root cause solutions, right?
Correct. We need to put a chain across the Blackwater.
Yeah.
We're not meeting with everyone who has a complaint. We're not doing customer service today. I'm sorry, we don't have the resources.
Yeah.
That guy's fueling the plane right now. We're not rerouting you. yeah, for sure.
But the dragons thing, you got a lot of enemies.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. I mean, if the dragons are at the point where they're eating kids, time to ride, baby. It's time to ride. Get a saddle. Say, hey, you guys got this city thing, right? I'm going to go ride.
Yeah.
That's it. You got the dragon?
It is.
You're off. You're off. You're having fun.
So what do you think about her decision to, this is jumping forward a little bit, but her decision to not take the ships and go to Westeros?
I mean, that decision
or wherever
is,
she would go.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. What I'm not saying when she takes the dragons and goes to ride, she necessarily even like leaves. Because I do think if she hops on a dragon and is like in the area, that's potentially even like making her people more safe, at least from external threats. You know what I mean? Like, she's worried about these invading armies coming. If she's already dragon riding, bro, they're not. You're fine. You just have to be like, yeah, I've got the city. If you got an issue, blow this horn. I'll be there in 5 minutes. And me and my three dragons are going to deal with it.
Yeah.
You guys figure out the city stuff. Do the domestic stuff. I'm bad at it. I'll just be flying around with my cool-ass dragons. I'll fly by every so often, so people are like, oh, sick. But, but like, I'm out. I'm going to keep these dragons from eating more children. And also, I'm going flying on these dragons.
You're essentially advocating for the approach of her having, like, a hand of the king or hand of the queen type of position,
mm-hmm.
who really manages the, like, the administrative issues.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
She's got dragons, guys.
I mean, and okay, here's the thing, though. Again, like, she kind of doesn't have anyone around her who can take on that role right now.
That's why we're hoping for Tyrion to get there.
Exactly. Yes.
I mean, you are right. I will say, like, they don't have to be perfect at it.
Yeah.
Like,
well, the thing is that, like, there's a lot of solutions.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point earlier, they don't, like, hold up to her, like, moral code, right?
Yes. It seems like people are trying to be a lot more practical and pragmatic. And she doesn't want to sacrifice any of her ethics for that.
Right.
Which
I do. The problem remains, though, that, like, by not choosing to do things, you are putting into motion, like, events that could be worse.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. I do also think it would not be hard for her to write down her, like, ethical wishes and have those enacted by somebody.
Yeah.
Like, I think her message, her sort of idea is fairly straightforward. It's like, we're not doing slavery anymore.
Yeah.
And also, I feel responsible for all these freed slaves.
Yeah.
That's basically it. So,
right.
You tell somebody that, you say, I'm going to check in regularly and randomly,
mm-hmm.
and I'm out. I'll be flying by.
Yeah, but in general, I'm going to be flying on my dragons.
I'm going to be having a sick dragon time. Yeah, which actually, I was going to save this, Luke, but it does bring me to a theory I've been cooking up.
Okay, nice.
So we get some more talk about Valyria in this mm-hmm. section. A little bit about how if you're going to try and travel through the area, like, your ships get fucked up, and if you take the road nearby, bad things happen to you, and how even on, like, the maps, like, old maps, Valyria is, like, whole, and it, like, really got fucked up during the, whatever it was called, the bad stuff, the shattering,
the doom,
or whatever.
I think is what they call it.
The doom, yeah. And, Luke, we get a little tale of Tyrion going, as they get closer and closer, like, weird shit is happening. Like, they're going through this mist. They're, like, repeating the same route twice. They get attacked by the grayscale people. And it leaves me wondering, Luke, there's very little information about this place, right?
This place being Valyria?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't looked at a map, by the way.
I have quite a bit because I have a physical. Okay. I'm reading a physical book right now, so I'm going back and forth. It's a good reading experience. Yeah.
Nice.
Valyria is sort of between Pentos and Karth. No, not Karth. Volantis and the Slaver's Bay. It's sort of between those two is Valyria.
Okay.
But I will say, seems like a place still kind of shrouded in mystery.
Yeah.
Man, if this is a real place, there would be so many vloggers going to see what's up and reporting back. Do you know what I mean? Like, there are so many adventurers just going to see what's up.
Yeah.
The pamphlets written about this place, the books written about this place, so many. And so the fact that it's still shrouded in mystery gets my theory brain a-moving a little bit, Luke.
Okay, nice.
Because I feel like there has to be a reason why there's not as much content out there about what's going on in Valyria.
I love how you're bringing in our type of cultural consumption into this scenario. Yes.
I mean, Luke, a book is going to be really valuable. If you can be like a book that's like Tales from a Modern Valyria.
Yeah.
That's flying off the shelves. You kidding me?
Right.
There's also like extremely valuable, quote, like theoretically, extremely valuable magical artifacts there. Swords that are like super lightweight and never get dull. Horns that call dragons and burn somebody's lungs out. Like, there's cool shit there.
Right.
So somebody has to be manipulating the narrative about this place. Somebody has to be sort of quashing the story, keeping this place a secret. Now, my top contenders for who's doing this, Varys and Illyrio.
Ooh, okay. That's a lot of power that we're assigning to them.
I think that they are some of the representatives of this group that is keeping the secret of what's going on.
Oh, so there's a cabal.
It's got to be more than just them. But I think that they are definitely players, at least in this part of the world, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially considering, like, they seem so desperate to put... It seems like they're trying to put a Targaryen on the throne in Westeros.
Yes.
And the question that you have to ask is, like, why? Like, how does that benefit them in any way? They seem to be doing pretty good without it. Like, what...
Right, especially Illyrio. Like, I think Tyrion talks to him, and he's like, what do you even have to gain from this?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so it's sort of like, what is motivating these people? Why are they doing this? Which leads me to who is doing this.
Okay.
Luke, at the time of the Doom... What was the most powerful society in the world?
I mean, like, what do you mean? Valyria, you mean?
Yeah, right? Of course. Valyria was the most powerful society in the world.
Right.
And so, consider that the Doom didn't happen to them, but was brought about intentionally by them.
Okay.
Now we have to ask, why are the Valyrians trying to keep secret? What are they hiding? I've got two answers for this, Luke. I've got two answers here for us to ponder. Theory number one. They're kind of done with the whole governing thing.
Okay.
They kind of did it, and then they realized what Daenerys is currently realizing, that it's not really fun anymore.
Yeah.
And they're like, it would be way cooler to just fly around on my dragon.
Yes,
and so,
I agree.
So this is their ripcord. This is their faking their own death, but on a societal level. Because if they just fuck off, everyone's going to be coming back to them like, hey, we don't know how to do our government. Can you help us with our government? And they're like, no, I'm not helping you with your government. I did that. I'm done.
Right. Or they'll be like, can you help us overthrow our government with your dragons?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And they're like, I don't want to do it. I tried that already. I don't want to do it. And so then, Luke, to tie this into why Varys and Illyrio are so desperate to get Daenerys back on the throne of Westeros. People are obsessed with dragons. They can't get enough, right?
Of course.
So if there are no dragons in the world, where's everybody going?
I don't know where you're leading me with that one.
They're going to Valyria. They're like, the closest we can get. Okay. We got to see if we can find some dragons, because those things are sick as fuck. I'm going to the spot where the dragons were. I'm going to go see if I can find some in Valyria.
Yeah.
But if there's a few dragons still out there flying around, people are like, oh, I just want to go see the dragons. Like, I don't need to go to Valyria. It's really dangerous. I'm going to go see the dragons.
Yeah. Yeah.
So keeping those few around, moving them to Westeros, you know, you've got the people in Westeros that are no longer trying to creep on Valyria. You don't get Crow Eye going over there to look for some shit because they don't need to.
Right.
They don't need to. It's coming
to
them.
The people demand dragons.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they don't get them, they'll go to Valyria, is what you're saying.
Exactly, Luke. Exactly. And so the motivation here and the way that this keeps people from going to Valyria, if you get Daenerys on the throne, is they have a target now. Like, they don't need to anymore. It's the distraction.
Right.
It's the distraction people need to stop them from finding the truth.
Okay. I like it. Yes.
Alternative theory, Luke. This is a Hari Seldon play. Do you remember a little Hari Seldon?
Okay. This is Foundation, right?
This is Foundation. Valyria. Yep.
Sees the end of the world coming, so he sets into motion ways to recover after the end of the world.
Yes. And there is a component of the Foundation series where the technology becomes seen as magic.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like intentional. And they sort of conceal where they're actually headquartered, right? They're like distracting people to look somewhere else while they do the like tech thing that they have to in their home planet.
Right.
And so this is what's happening, Luke. This is, they're just doing a foundation. Because remember too, Luke, on this world, there used to be way bigger magic. We're kind of in a dark age right now.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of cooking. They're cooking there, but they can't have anybody come look, because then they'll see them with like test tubes and like,
yeah,
nuclear devices and freak out. So they've got to keep a little mystery.
So there's a little paradise somewhere where like science has advanced, but they're not ready to take it mainstream yet is kind of the,
yeah, exactly.
The view.
The forces of ignorance are too powerful still, right?
Yeah.
They saw Robert Baratheon and were like, God, these guys are not ready.
Those guys just want to fight boars.
They're not ready for AI. They'd all have waifus in a second.
Oh, so true.
That's all they
so
would do true. With it.
We got to do a couple more iterations.
Tyrion would be cooking up the
worst
revenge porn.
They're hiding in Valyria to get... Yeah, they're hiding in Valyria to kind of knock out the kinks of their AI chatbots.
Yeah. Yeah. Luke, I will say as well that I think Illyrio is a little bit more of a mystery to me. I think Maybe Illyrio is getting paid by this organization to do his work. Like, not necessarily that he has been the smartest, best merchant to be in the place he is, but he has, like, agreed to help them, and so they have put him in this position of influence. Because, I mean, he doesn't seem that great of a merchant. He just drinks all day.
Yeah, but you just need a great insight occasionally, Dan.
You got to make one good trade, and then the rest is coasting.
Yeah, after that, it's like your money just creates more money.
Yeah, God, I can't. We're all going to get there someday, right? I've got a course you could take that'll teach you how to do it.
Yeah, it's like $900
a month. Yeah, but it's worth it. It's called an investment. Anyway, so I think Illyrio is on the employ of this organization. Varys is one of them.
Yeah. Well, Varys, it's like anytime you're like, there's a shady organization going on, I'm like, Varys is in there. Yeah.
Varys is also, this is adding to the theory here, Luke, Targaryen.
Okay. Is say it again?
Targaryen. Varys is Targaryen.
Varys is Targaryen. Okay.
Varys, here's, all right. Okay. I will say, I've read all these books. I don't think this is ever confirmed or denied in the books. I have not watched the show, so I have no idea if this is confirmed or denied in the show. But Varys, bald. Any bald character in this book, you got to be skeptical of.
Right. And maybe he wears contacts to keep his eyes from being
purple.
He's
a master of disguise, Luke.
Right, just like the movie. He's bald.
Luke, I will also say he's often seen wearing purple and common perfume for Varys, lilac, violets, rose water. But lilac and violets.
Yeah.
It feels like he's winking at us a little. It feels like he's like, little purple going on.
People are seeing purple when they see me.
Little purple moment. Yeah. That's also why he has the tech to do his little whispers thing, to do his little birds or his spiders or whatever he calls them.
Sure.
It's just a bunch of drones. He's got listening devices everywhere.
All right. I forgot that's where you were with this theory.
Yeah.
Right. Of course. Yeah. No, that all seems reasonable to me.
So anyway, that's the story. I mean, we also did just learn about this other Targaryen that's like dyeing their hair and,
right,
wearing colors to make their eyes look less purple. So they're out there.
Yeah. Does that work, by the way?
I don't know. Maybe. Feels like no.
Maybe.
But
maybe.
Maybe it works. Feels like a purple eye is pretty distinctive, but.
Right. But if you have blue hair.
Right.
Looks more blue. So.
Yeah. And if you have no hair, who knows what it looks like?
Okay, can I do my note about Tyrion going down this route?
With the Shady River route?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's going down the Rhoyne, is the river.
Mm-hmm.
And he's seeing all these ruins. And every time they're like passing something, he's like, oh, this is like this ruin that I've read about that was like the greatest palace of all time that's 1,000 years old.
Yeah.
And it's like this amazing thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they turn another corner and it's like, this is what used to be the greatest city in the world,
mm-hmm,
like 2,000 years ago.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, this is the most historic boat ride. Why are not, like, I realized, as to your point previously, that this is like a sketchy area.
Yeah.
But people make this trip for like traders and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's cool. I want to go.
Again, this is part of the theory, Luke, because you know there'd be like a Viking river cruise that'd be going down here. They'd have some old retired folks being like, wow, look at this. Look at the palace where Nymeria lived before she left. And like, oh, if you look over to the left side, you can see some like statues poking out of the water. Those are cool and ancient.
Right. And then they're almost through the sketchy area, the like sorrows, I think.
Yeah.
And one of them is like, oh, as soon as we're through there, it's like awesome because there's a new town around every turn.
Yeah.
And the those towns are like the size of a city in Westeros. And they're like, they're sick.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, a couple of notes here. That sounds great.
Yep.
There should be more traffic up here. Also, let's clean up some of these ruins. Also, like, what are we doing in Westeros? I don't want to hear about Westeros anymore. Why are people pretending like Westeros is the center of the world? Westeros is like some backwater compared to these places.
Right.
Right?
We're learning, right, Luke, we're learning that Westeros is actually like Oklahoma in this world.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's felt like it's like London or New York City.
Right, exactly.
But that's just because we've only been in Oklahoma the whole time.
Yeah, all the Westeros kind of sucks. No shade on Oklahoma.
The only thing they had going for them was dragons. Oh no, Luke. This is the third theory.
Okay.
This is the third theory is that the people who make money in Westeros are realizing that they've lost their only tourism route, which is that they were the only place that had dragons anymore.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And they've seen a sharp decline in the tourism revenue after the last dragon died out.
Of course.
And so they're investing to bring the dragons back to have a cool attraction. You know, it's like a zoo that loses the panda. They're paying China whatever they can to get that panda back.
100%, yeah. Yeah, no, that's fair. but do you know what I mean?
Like 100%, Luke. This is like an amazing place to come be and live. And sure they don't have like knights and stuff, but easy trade. It seems like an easy trade.
Easy trade. Also, just everything, everywhere seems so much more powerful when you think about it. Because, like, let's think about, I don't know, let's do Winterfell, for example. Mm-hmm. Major city?
Yeah, kind of.
Castle, I guess? I mean, like, King's Landing is a major city.
Yeah.
But like it seems really small based on the way that they talk about it compared to some of these other ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And their roads are garbage. And they're kind of always at like a low grade war that keep them from actually doing things.
Yeah.
Get me out of there.
They've got a cool wall though.
They do have a cool wall.
And
I will say they can seem really badass a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can we talk? There's one quote that I want to bring up,
mm-hmm.
and I'm changing gears here a little bit.
Yeah, that's fine.
This is a little bit earlier in this section.
Mm-hmm.
When Stannis is asking the like lords of the North for their support.
Yep.
And the young girl from the like Mormont, I think is the last name, sends back Bear Island knows no king but the king in the North whose name is Stark. Oh, that line goes so hard.
It is sick. It is really sick. Yeah.
God, that'd be awesome to say that.
Luke, you're right. You're right. The vibes are off the charts. The aura, Westeros gives off a powerful aura. No question.
Yeah.
But yes, like people in Westeros are going on like international travel to other places. Like they want to go see all this cool shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Westeros is definitely getting like a lot of their satisfaction based on just saying cool things to each other.
Mm. Absolutely. Yeah. I am glad you brought us to Stannis, however.
Yeah.
You've definitely mentioned this before, but I do need to point it out once again, how much of a hypocrite Stannis is. And how everybody keeps talking about him like he follows the law and is like unbending when it comes to the law, and that's part of his problem.
Yeah.
Not true. Objectively not true, guys. He is like asking the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch to abandon his post to like become the Stark in Winterfell.
Right.
That's patently, blatantly against the laws about the Night's Watch.
Right. There's a lot on there that they talk about Stannis as if like he doesn't even necessarily want to be the king.
Yeah.
But he like is by definition the rightful king right now, so he has to like go for it basically.
Yep.
And like, yeah, you can't, if that's the level of thought that you're putting into it, you can't ask these things of like John or like you can't ask or make these strategies that he does.
No. It's really just Stannis using the law to justify what he wants to do.
Yeah.
And nobody calls him stubborn for it, because instead they're like, oh, he just follows the law really tightly. It's like, no, he doesn't.
Yeah.
He's stubborn and he's also not that clever. So he has to fall back on being like, oh yeah, the law says I have to do this thing.
Right.
Whatever.
Stannis is so annoying.
Stannis, you suck.
At this point. But you know who I like who's connected to Stannis is my guy Davos.
Oh. Yeah, easy.
So, okay, I think it's been a while since I've read this book, but from what I remember, and we'll see as we read more of it, for weird reasons, like the Davos plot line when he's going to these like shitty little islands always for some reason like made my imagination go much harder.
Yep.
In weird ways, because like they're like such little backwaters.
Yes.
But they, because of the way that this world works and because of like how precarious everything is, they end up like having a lot of influence. And like also because they're such backwaters, like no one's paying that close of attention to them.
Right.
And so they can kind of like do more weird stuff.
Yes.
And I may be forgetting, but I think we'll see more of that as we go along. But like just in this section, they're telling the story about how Ned had to get back, and he had to like go through this place, and he had to do certain things because like if he didn't, like he would have just like died here or gotten stuck here or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, man.
Yep.
These little things, like everyone is super vulnerable all the time.
Yes.
And small decisions by seemingly inconsequential people can end up being like really impactful.
Yes. I also really love these sections for the exact same reason. They feel really alive to me. Like they feel so alive in the world. And exactly like you're saying, they're like an indication that everybody is vulnerable to a certain extent, and everybody has the potential to end up here and have to get some help from them. And they like, they get to be part of the story too, even though they're like often forgotten about. And I mean, sort of like Davos himself in a way, like it's a good parallel with Davos. But yeah, I also just love how in both of these, Davos is sort of acting as like a smuggler, like pirate kind of guy. Like he is experiencing these places and giving the perspective of these places as like a person who just would have been there, who just would have like walked around and like seen the place.
Yeah.
And I think that's like a great perspective in this, because often we get the perspective of people who are like in the halls of power.
Yeah.
Also, this is like the tiniest note, but the soup, the sister's stew.
This is my note,
sounded
actually.
So good.
The soup sounded so good. It was like raining and cold, and I was expecting it to sound terrible, and it was like they put it in a little bread bowl, and it's like so hearty, and there's like chunks of crab and stuff in it. It's like
it's and I think George is really, pardon the pun here, cooking with this, because I think you're right. The expectation he sets up is that this is going to suck, because this whole place seems like it kind of sucks. Like, it's dirty, yeah. It's muddy, it's poor, there's not many torches in the hall, it's threadbare. But then he breaks out the soup and it's like, oh, fuck, these guys can cook.
Yeah. Yeah, the sister's stew, I think, is what it's called. That's what I wrote down.
Yep. And it sounds so good. And I think that's like...
It's like a trashy little castle on a shitty little island, yep, that's raining, and it's like dirt... I don't know if it's dirt floors, but it's like leaking,
yep,
in this lord's castle. And they just bring out this soup, though.
Mm-hmm. And I think, Luke...
I love it.
I think it like fits. So part of the reason it stands out, I think, not only is that it sounds amazing, but I think it also fits what George is trying to do with the chapter, which is exactly what we've been talking about, that like these places still have that thing. They still have that sauce that makes them stand out in a way. They still have like, nowhere is completely unimportant. You know what I mean?
Right. And everywhere has... It's incredibly rich and long history, mm-hmm, right? Because like even this little trashy island that I keep roasting, like the lords there have been there for like 1,000 years,
yes,
or longer,
yes,
or something. And like they have these memories that go back and grudges that go back forever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And like it just makes them, it's a huge contrast for like, oh, these people who I immediately would have written off are like actually have a similar level of not power necessarily, but like complexity as like the Starks, for example.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Ugh. And also the soup sounded good.
And the soup sounded really good. And I'm not even a seafood guy.
Me neither.
Sounded great.
I'm glad we had the same note on this, Luke.
Which a lot of George, famously George writes food really extravagantly.
Mm-hmm.
But this one went, like, I don't love the food that Illyrio is eating a lot of the time.
No.
But this one, this soup, though.
Yeah. Great work.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to talk about, Luke, I guess is sort of related to the soup. Tyrion talks about how he's able to put together his story for when he's on the boat and he's trying to conceal his identity.
Mm-hmm.
And so he comes up with this idea that like he can still be from Lannisport or Casterly Rock or wherever, because like in the rural places they wouldn't have like let him live, like he was only able to sort of survive because he was in a city.
Mm-hmm.
And the specific thing that he mentions is that out in rural places a lot of things would get thrown down a well, like a cow with three heads or a dwarf baby.
Yeah.
No, it wouldn't, actually.
Yeah, don't throw things down the well.
Like, Tyrion, you've never lived out there, so I imagine you don't know, but like people drink from there.
Yeah.
So they're not throwing just like dead animals and people into it.
It's like the worst place that you want to throw.
Like by far. No. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of an important drinking source.
Yeah.
So maybe this is Tyrion just showing his like his sort of bigotry about country people. Is he's like, they're all stupid, they throw shit in their own drinking water.
I feel like it's more just Tyrion doesn't really think about this level of, although he was apparently in charge of the drainage system at Casterly Rock.
Yeah, you'd think he would know better, which is also why I think that he is just saying this to say how stupid country people are.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's probably right.
Come on, bud. Give him a chance.
Man. When will the city folks stop being so mean to the rurals?
Tale as old as time, Luke. I will also say, Luke, we gotta just have a little back of our mind note here about Tyrion being a secret assassin. We already had a big, huge piece of evidence in the last book when he murdered the most powerful man in Westeros.
Yeah,
pretty assassiny thing for him to do.
Pretty assassiny, yes.
He also is good at identifying poisonous mushrooms and is keeping a bunch on his person now.
Well, he thinks he is.
It's very assassiny.
It is very assassiny. I feel like the mushrooms thing, he just kind of thinks that all mushrooms are poisonous.
Didn't somebody like specify that they're poisonous to him?
Maybe.
I think he was either told or he had confirmed that the mushrooms he's got are actually poisonous. And I think that's part of why he was so sus of Illyrio when he fed him the mushrooms. He was like, are these the poison ones? I don't know.
Right.
But pretty assassiny.
Yeah.
So just keep that in mind.
Your longstanding theory.
Luke, it's such a good one.
It is.
Anyway, so
we need to come back to our flat Westeros theory. I need to read back up on that, actually.
Yes. We'll come back to it. But not this episode, Luke. We are going to finish the next quarter, so we'll be about halfway through for next week.
Yep.
Hopefully Daenerys figures out what's going on in her city. Mm-hmm. She gets on a dragon and just does it right.
Exactly. She
does it right. We'll see what's happening in Valyria, maybe.
Hopefully. That'd be cool.
And we'll be back bringing the hot takes.
And being dumb nerds.